Okay, well, thanks for coming out. And today, just to give you what we're going to do today and possibly next week, we'll see how far we get through. I'm going to present and talk a little bit about what I've been doing for the last 3 months now. And you know, the residency I'm doing is a year long. Share some of the insights that have come and some of the process. What is it? What it's all about? And so we'll do that. Today. Next week, I'm going to be out of town for a couple weeks after that. Rob is going to help teach Sunday school while I'm gone. And then when I come back, we're going to start a series that will take us through the end of the year as far as Sunday school is concerned, which would be called the Gospel Gap. And we'll talk about how the gospel applies to different things in our life, like anger, depression, anxiety, fear, worry, the gospel in my future decision making. So, just the idea being that for many of us, you know, the gospel. I don't want to get into this, but the gospel is important at the beginning of our life. It gets us saved, and we know that it'll be important at the end of our life when we die and go to heaven. But what does it matter, like in the day-to-day trenches of life, for my parenting, for my work, for those types of things? So, we're going to start a series on that will take us through the end of the year. But that's where we're going. Let's talk about the evangelism residency. As many of you know, I think most of you, or hopefully all of you, are on the emails that I've been sending out, the newsletter, and I will get one out next week, although much of what you'll read there you'll have heard today and probably next week. But in September, I joined a residency. It's called Evangelize Today through a guy in D.C. named Al Dayhoff. This is a book that he wrote. This is what got me interested. I met Al at General Assembly, I should say, that last June. I remember talking to him. He had a booth there at General Assembly. He was trying to get ministers to think about coming on and doing what I'm doing. And I was intrigued by it for a couple of reasons. One is, it's just so hard as a pastor, particularly when you're a solo pastor, to get outside of the four walls of the church. You can easily spend all of your time doing church stuff, which is great, but you know, if you believe, and I do, that God has called us to be evangelists, and as a pastor, I want to lead in that area. You know, it's been a burden on me to try to find a way to get out. Of course, it's harder, you know, when like I have, you've relocated to an area where you're not from, because you have no natural connections outside of the church. You've got to work even harder to actually have even interaction with non-Christians at all. And one of Al's things, I'll call him Al, is that many Christian pastors, especially, and the residency is mainly for pastors, many Christian pastors don't know any non-Christians. And that's a problem, obviously, and part of why he's doing what he's doing is to try to encourage guys, give guys accountability to get out of there. Al is a PCA minister, but started Evangelize Today. This is called Church in a Blues Bar, by the way. Interesting book, worth reading if you're interested in reading on evangelism. He was a pastor, started a church, was a pastor, I think, for about 15 years. And then just got a little disillusioned, not with the church, but with the fact that he didn't see, he saw a lot of people coming to church. You know, it was a successful, started as a church plant. The church got bigger, it grew, they bought a new building, they had lots of programs, they had all of a sudden a lot of money. But he got disillusioned when, you know, he realized one day that everyone that's coming, nobody is coming from out of faith into faith. We have a lot of people coming to the church now, but they're all Christians just coming from other churches. And that bothered him. And I'll read you, he's a bit of a poet in some sense. And so each of these chapters in this book starts with a little thought or poem that he wrote. And so I'll just give you some insight into his mind when he says this. Built a church today and all shouted amen. Now never, never be nomads again. So he's talking about the fact that they got this big church building for their church. Nice seats, stained glass, all real clean. Pastor's office for the souls to be seen. People fill our church. It's a thrill to see them gather. So now what's the matter? People don't come from some lonely door. They come from that other church. They don't like it no more. That's what bothered him. You know, he built this big church and everything was fresh and clean, but nobody's, he just didn't see the church really reaching that lonely door, as he puts it. But we're really reaching other Christians, and advertising is just basically pulling Christians around from church to church to church to church to church. All of our marketing, all that stuff, we're not really actually reaching non-Christians with that stuff. We're actually marketing to other Christians. And so that's why he started Evangelize Today, which is the name of this. And I think, in any way, the reason it's called Church in a Blues Bar is because he now basically, long story short, he started going to a blues bar routinely just to kind of get out of the noise of Christian ministry and be himself with his hair down. And anyway, he ends up having some pretty significant spiritual interaction with people there who are really down and out in life, and now actually has a church out of this blues bar that's been going on for at least, I want to say, 2 years now. Started, they meet Sunday, and in the bar. So anyway, and so that's his story. You know, just and part of this book is, you know, okay, he learned kind of a different way to reach people through this experience, and so anyway, as far as what the residency is, it's not a lot of people have asked, is it are you reading books, are you in a classroom, or are you doing a lot of homework? No, it's not like that. It's more mentoring. There is a workbook that I work through, but it's not real. It's not academic. It's not real rigorous. I'm not reading, you know, 50 books on evangelism or anything like that. It's more exercises, some of which I'll share in a minute, where you go back, you look at your own life, you talk with Al is my coach, mentor, whatever, however you want to phrase it. You talk with him about that, and yeah, I mean, it's not about, you know, learning more techniques for evangelism. That's not it. There is, I guess, one technique, and that's what I'll talk about today. But I talk with him twice a month for probably an hour to an hour and a half. But as most of you, I think, know, because you're on the newsletter, you know, the big push is to just get out there and do it. It's not necessarily to learn something, but to get out and actually have significant interactions, spiritual conversations with people outside of outside of the faith, and try to find ways to make that happen naturally in a way that opens the door for future conversations. So that's really the main push of the residency, and that's one of the main reasons I did it, because it would give me the accountability to really force me to do that, force me to get outside of my own comfort zone, because as we all know, without accountability, it's sometimes difficult to push yourself. Well, it's the reason why, you know, you go to the gym as opposed to work out in your house, because you see all these other people working out. Okay, I gotta keep up with everybody. Yeah, so it's just that accountability. So what have I learned from this residency to date? Now, keep in mind, I think the bulk of the lessons will come in the next 8 and 9 months, because to date I've only done of the 50 interviews, which was the goal for this residency, basically interview 50 people. I'll talk more about that in a minute. Over the course of a year, roughly one a week. So I've done 10% of that now. So, which is, for you math majors, you know, 5. And a couple sporadic questions here and there. But as far as full sit down conversations, I've done 5 out of the 50. And so I'm going to pick up, hopefully, Lord willing, be picking up the pace February, March, April, May, to get up to 50. But what's one of the biggest takeaways to date? And I'll say what it is, and then I'll explain it. And by the way, if you have any questions, feel free to raise your hand at any time, and we can talk. I don't have to keep talking. If I hear something you want to hear more about.
Have you talked with the people over at Safe Harbor? Usually the people who are in those kind of outreach type programs and things of that nature are the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
For many, many years I did that. And doing that over at the other church and whatnot. So you're not those people who do not have the faith.
Yeah.
So basically just...
I couldn't hear him.
He asked if I had talked to anyone at Safe Harbor, if I had gone over there to talk with them. And the answer is no, I haven't, but that's a good idea. And no. So, feel free to pop in with questions. Here's the biggest takeaway I've had. And it's the idea of, when we approach people and we're talking with people, we want to get into spiritual conversations. Al frames it in terms of, are we having a confrontational monologue or a relational dialogue? Confrontational monologue versus relational dialogue. The idea behind Evangelize Today, it's nothing unique, but it really starts with everybody is made in the image of God. We know that God says he made us all in his image, believers, non-believers. We're all made in the image of God. We all have, as Paul says in Romans, God's law pressed upon our hearts and our conscience. And because of that, we know, we can be assured that no matter who we're talking to, no matter how far away from belief someone might seem to be, we all do think about and wrestle with certain questions. Why am I here? Where did I come from? Where did anything come from? Why is there something rather than nothing? What happens when I die? Who is Jesus Christ, and how does he affect me? It doesn't matter, what they say or profess, because just by virtue of the fact we're created as humans in the image of God, people have these things on their mind. What am I doing here? Now, Al says, and I think he's right. I don't want to just keep saying Al says. But the residency I'm doing is kind of based on the idea that too much of our evangelism has taken the form of monologues instead of a dialogue. Oftentimes a confrontational monologue. Oftentimes a one-way bullhorn, as he would say in this book. Confrontational monologue, he defines it as any communication that spends little effort contemplating the state or uniqueness of the receiver. And he gives the example of a stranger walking up to another stranger and presenting a prepackaged message on how to save them, which that person can either accept or reject. And again, he's not saying that's all bad, that's all rubbish, that's all wrong. He's just saying times are changing. We're now living in a post-Christian age, and it only seems like that is going to continue to increase, a post-Christian age where people have less and less of the pieces in place already to even make sense of a so-called gospel presentation. And just to give you an example of that, I talked to a guy on Wednesday. I did an interview Wednesday with a guy I play tennis with. He's an 18-year-old high school senior, never stepped foot in a church his entire life. And when I asked him, what do you believe about Jesus? He said, honestly, the only thing I know about Jesus is what I learned in 10th grade history class. Just absolutely no knowledge of basically anything that we would take for granted as, surely you've heard of this or that. No. And so times are changing. More and more people, especially the next generation, are from homes like that. They're not being exposed to some of the biblical concepts. People have no idea what sin is or how that affects them. And because of that, a monologue saying accept Jesus as your Savior, it assumes way too much now. It assumes way too much for the most part. As far as what people can accept. So that's one of the problems. It assumes that the receiver agrees with things like the existence of God. Even 50 years ago, you could pretty much go to the bank that even if someone wasn't a Christian, they believed in a personal God of some sort. Not just God, not just a concept of God, but a personal God who intervenes in the world. That's just not true anymore. With the influence of Eastern religions that I think we're heavy in the 50s and 60s, that you just can't take that for granted. Even if someone says they believe in God, they're thinking of a personal God, a God who actually intervenes in the world or has power to do that. And so that's one of the problems. We're a post-Christian age. The other problem is we're also kind of, in some ways, a post-truth age. And people are, you know, it's what they call postmodern in a way. People are now suspicious in the age in which we live, secular people, of strong truth claims. And people don't like, and this is now one of my favorite words, they don't like to be truthed, you know, as a verb, you know, where you just come and just dump truth on them, hit them over the head with a 4x4 of truth. People don't normally, we're speaking in general, right? I mean, this isn't every single person who's... But just that's kind of his analysis, and again, I think he's right of the society of where we are as a country, as a culture. It's post-Christian. We're suspicious of strong truth claims, and so coming to somebody and you know, kind of dumping, for lack of a better word, a gospel presentation on them. It's not that it's wrong. The question is it effective? Is it effective? I mean, of course, we can have those. We can get people to listen to us, but how effective in it? And he says many people in the secular community are ready to recount an unpleasant and wounding encounter with overzealous Christians or the church. The gospel sounds to them like an untimely telemarketer calling during the dinner hour. You know, because we... sadly, I think he's probably right. And moreover, people have become very guarded when it comes to yet another presentation of a belief system for their lives. And so Christians, for whether it's true or not, you know, have probably a rap of being people that, you know, truth people. You're a Christian, okay, are you going to give me the Jesus speech? All right, you know, when's that coming? No, that's not, it's not to say that's a bad thing, but if that's how people are responding, is there a better way to kind of engage? Because people have questions, you know, questions that the gospel answers. But how do we get an opportunity to get it? And so again, Al says, if we continue in our current form, and most of our models are based on presentations. You sit and listen to me. I mean, what am I thinking? Evangelism Explosion is that model. Okay, you begin with one or two diagnostic questions, but then, okay, you sit and listen to me. Here's the presentation. Now, you know, believe it. That's just kind of how we hear. Or let me tell you about the four spiritual laws that I walk you through. Those. I mean, this is how we're built as Western American Christians. That's how we've been trained to share the gospel. And he says, if we continue doing this, we will still have opportunities to communicate it. But has real communication really taken place? And our goal is to have real communication, not just get words out and think, oh good, I was able to share the gospel with someone today because I walked them through the four laws. We should be more interested, did they actually hear what I was saying? Did they actually want to hear what I was saying? Are they actually even thinking about it, or were they thinking while I was talking, I can't wait till this guy is done and gets out of here and so I don't have to see him again? All of that to say, the residency that I'm pursuing pursues evangelism through the form of relational dialogue and not a monologue. We know people are wrestling with questions, and we want to respect the image of God in them. And part of the way we respect people and the image of God in people is to dialogue with them, to listen to them, listen to their thoughts before responding, basically. And so Al's big thing, or I keep saying Al, the residency that I'm doing, one of the first lessons or projects that I had to do was called Listening to Hear. And it just the whole thing is just about, it's just a little bit of reading, a chapter on how, you know, even it's not just when we're talking to unbelievers about faith, it's just in our lives in general, even in our families. When we listen to people talk, we normally listen to respond, right? And so while someone's talking, we've got our own little dialogue going on in our head, thinking, no, that's not right. I'm waiting. We're thinking of our response as we're listening to someone talk. And so we're listening to them, but we're not really listening to them. We're just listening because we want to respond and get our two cents, and so they listen to us. And he said, that's a big problem for people in general, probably particularly for Americans. And, it's just hard for us to be fully present with someone without thinking of what we're going to say to respond, rebut, until after they're actually fully listening to them before we actually even start thinking about okay, you know, what would I say about that? We have a hard time listening to hear. We've got a lot of noise in our own heads. We think about our day and the things we have to do. We think about if we're listening to someone in a faith conversation or we're trying to share our faith, we're listening and we're thinking of how everything they're saying is theologically wrong and problematic, and we're thinking about how the best arguments to defeat whatever that, we're thinking about all these things, a lot of noise going on. It's for keeping us from really being fully present. And what we need to be, and this is hard, it's kind of humbling to think, people pick up on that. We all pick up, we can usually tell when someone is kind of spaced out. I mean, they're not saying anything, they're nodding, but they're not really there. Wives are probably better than that than husbands. You're not here. Where are you right now? I'm right here. No, you're not. We sense that. We give off by. So when we're not really present, when we're busy in our own minds, it's obvious. People pick up on that. It's not a safe spot. You're not really it. But when we're really listened to, boy, I mean that's a significant. It's something we really appreciate. So. That's really the basis. That's the start of this evangelism residency, learning to listen to hear. Before we have any kind of response, listen. Listen to what they have to say. Ask questions and listen. And in some ways, I think what I'm doing now is similar. If you were here last fall, was it? We went through Greg Kuchel's book, Tactics, and talked about his approach to evangelism, which is using questions and the Columbo questions. And so instead of coming up and confronting people with truth claims, what do you mean by that? And how did you come to that conclusion? And the whole idea is you have to know what people believe before you can effectively respond. And in some ways, this is similar, but it actually goes a step farther. Because in tactics, you would use questions to find out, but then you'd use tactics to or questions to respond and take control and answer objections and all that. But what this residency is trying to impart in me and the other guys doing it is that before we even move on to responding, we've just got to listen for a while. In a way, you've almost got to earn the right to respond the way the culture is today. And so... ask questions and just listen. And don't be thinking about what other questions can I ask to put you on the defensive or take control of the conversation. There's a place for that. He's not saying we never get there, but it's really driving this one point home. We've got to learn to listen to hear without responding. And want to do that because we really are interested in hearing and want to know what this other person believes. And is thinking, and we're just going to listen. That respects the image of God in the person, and perhaps somewhat ironically, I don't know if that's the right word. If we can actually do that, it will open the door for a fruitful dialogue later. If you listen to hear to somebody, chances are they're going to be much more likely to listen to hear when it comes time for you to have an opportunity to share with them what you believe, instead of being on the defensive while you're sharing. They're actually going to listen. Now, this is much harder to do than it sounds like. Because like all of you, I'm wired to respond, to defend. It's very hard to listen to people say things that, to me, from my point of view, seem completely just out there. And say things about the Bible or Jesus, which demonstrates that they've never read the Bible, it's hard for me to listen to that and not say anything. But I'm actually starting to see fruit from it, and that's kind of what evangelist is trying to drive home. If you can do that, we feel like we've kind of lost an opportunity if we don't respond, or somehow we failed God if we just listen and we don't say anything, and we listen to people say things that aren't true about God or about Jesus, or vent their frustration without, defending God, so to speak. We feel like we fail, and that's just not true. And that's what this residency is. We shouldn't feel that way. We've been trained to feel that way, because we've been trained to feel that unless we get across certain content or bring out our apologetics tool bags, we've lost. The conversation. We've lost the mini battle. But it's actually not true. Because here's what we're finding. A couple things. One is, the more a person talks, the more he talks himself to God and not away from God. So if you let a person talk and just listen, it's very interesting what starts to come out. When especially if you really have convinced them that you're safe to talk to, that you're not going to respond, it actually, in some ways, it takes the pressure off of them and off of you, because you don't have to be thinking about, oh boy, how am I going to respond and rebut all these arguments? What if I don't know what to say? I just really want to listen. I just want to, would it be all right if I, I'm just curious if I can ask you a few questions? And it takes a lot of pressure off them, because they don't have to worry about, you know, you, they're not on the defensive. You just want, really, you just want to listen. It's, you know, again, I think there's some tactics here with Kuchel. He said people like to talk. And because we're made in the image of God and we all think about these things, we like to talk about these things. We've all thought about them. And so the more, if we create a spot for people to talk, they will talk themselves to God and not away from God. And it's actually very interesting to hear that happen. And I've already heard that happen in some conversations that I've had. The other thing that has been, again, something I wouldn't have expected, but my, you know, Al has been saying, you'll see this, and now I'm starting to see it, is that if you create a space to just listen and you let people talk, who's listening? You're listening, but they're listening to themselves. And often, as they're explaining what they believe, they're listening to what's coming out of their mouths, and they're asking, do I really believe what I'm saying right now? And it can be a very eye-opening, in some ways, moment for them as they articulate what it is. And just to give you an example of this, the guy I interviewed last week, we went through all the questions, which I'll share in just a minute, and was texting with him later that night, and I didn't bring my phone with me. But again, keep in mind, all I did was ask him questions and listen. I didn't respond to him at all. I didn't, what do you believe about Jesus? What do you believe about God? And as I said, he knew very little. He had very little to say to some of these because, well, the only thing he ever read about Jesus was his 10th grade history book. And so it wasn't even that long of an interview. And it wasn't like we had some great philosophical it wouldn't have seemed, if you were listening into it, that there was lots of light bulbs going off or anything. I was just listening. And he texted me later that night and said, unprovoked, hey, thanks for doing that. I'm really glad that we did this, because it was kind of eye opening how little I knew about the subject and how uneducated I am. So, to me, I was like, wow, he was listening to himself, right? He drew that conclusion himself. I didn't point that out to him. I didn't go say, well, hey, you obviously haven't read any of the Bibles. You need to go do that because you're speaking about what you know not. I mean, it wouldn't have been received that well, probably, if I didn't. Now, that was his take. So even though I didn't say anything, there was a powerful truth communicated there, which he grasped himself, because he was listening more than I was. And just being asked to articulate this, he realized, wow, I don't know what I'm talking about. And what a powerful takeaway, much more so than if I had, you know, tried to convince him, you know, by responding to him. So that's one of the things we have to remember, and it's hard to believe this. But just listening actually can communicate powerful truth, because they're listening to themselves just as much, if not more, than you're listening to them asking, do I really believe this? It can be an eye-opening experience for them. So that's one key takeaway for me, and I'll be interested to see how that unfolds as we go through some of the sit down and talk to other people. The other thing is, if we just listen, and again, I'm talking to myself as much because it's not natural for me to do this, it really communicates more than we think. One, people hear. Two, it is a way of respecting the image of God in somebody else. I mean, none of us like it when the Jehovah's Witness come to our door, knock, and I mean, we avoid them because we know we're going to get truthed, and we don't want to get truthed. They're interested in... And so we need to remember that from our perspective as we try to evangelize as well. This is really random, but just this Friday, I was at the Y. I was in the locker room getting ready to go teach Tenley's tennis class, and there was an old gentleman there, and actually a World War II vet, turned out, as we started talking. And he asked me, and this is, I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but he asked me what I did. Oh, I'm a pastor. Oh, yeah, my brother is a pastor. Great respect for pastors. I go to Central. I shouldn't even say the church. I go to a church in town. Oh, great. And then he said, and granted, he had to be 90. It would be my guess, right around there. And he said, do you believe that the word is inerrant? And this is what he asked me. And I said, this is right in the locker room, right in the locker room of the Y. Yeah, I do. He said, oh, we're going to have problems then. And then he proceeded to start, he started then on about a 15-minute
diatribe.
Not a diatribe, it wasn't like it was anger or anything, but he was trying to explain to me, you know, some of his concerns. And I'll be honest, about 2 minutes into it, when I realized he wasn't really interested in dialoguing about this at all, he just wanted to talk. I kind of wanted out of there. I'll just be honest. I didn't really want to sit there in the locker and listen to, but I did. And so I probably sat there for 15 minutes. Yeah, that's very interesting. You know, tried to listen to him. Tried to battle my own, voices in my head saying, "Let's end this and get out of here and go do what you want to do," which was hard. It's hard to do that. But I got voices in my head. I said, there's medication for that, right? Okay. But at the end of it, he says, and again, I was wrestling with patience. But 15 minutes later, he's done. There's a natural stopping point. I said, well, it was so nice talking to you. And he said, I want to thank you. Really?
Okay.
You want to thank me? Nobody listens to anybody. You listen to me. Thank you. I was like, God, what are you trying to tell me? You know, I mean, just... And so I didn't communicate with him at all. I mean, I'd love to talk with him about his inerrancy thing and all of that. But if nothing else, I blessed the guy just by listening to him, you know. And if I wanted to have a conversation with him now, I believe it would be much better heard than if I had responded, oh, you want to talk about inerrancy? Let's go, you know. No, that's not right. What you're saying isn't right. You know, because what he was saying was very... very interesting and just quite bizarre, frankly. But didn't butt in, and I didn't expect him to say that. But I mean, it was a blessing to this guy. Nobody listens anymore. Nobody listens. So he said to me, "Thank you for listening to me." If we're really able to listen to someone, and again, I could have done a lot better listening to hear, because I'm not trying to paint myself as some saint. It was hard for me to stand there, and there was a lot of noise in my head. So if he had seen that, he might not have thanked me. But but if we can do this, it will really open up opportunity to be heard, to share, because it is rare. It is rare when someone actually takes an interest in you and is willing to listen to you. We're all so distracted. We're all so busy. You know, we all got places to go and people to see. And so one of the things that Al says he's finding, of course, he's got pastors like me throughout the country that are reporting to him. He's doing this as a full-time job. He says, if you really listen to hear, for people outside of the faith, it's almost like a spiritual experience. And they want more. If you can actually hear them and ask them, it will be a meaningful experience for them, because so few people... One, so few people just talk about these things in general, but so few people actually listen. When you talk about them, they're just being talked to. Spiritual experience. Now, that's a strong way, but I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how that develops. And then let me say one more thing, and then any questions, we'll do it. Once we can, and this is something that is starting to kind of cement in my mind, even in 3 months into this, for people outside the church, for people that have no community of faith, as Christians, we talk about spiritual things all the time. We ask each other we can pray for each other, and we come to church, we hear about it. It's kind of built into our life. But for people outside the church, and particularly for people who had no previous experience in the church, which again, there are more and more of those in our country today, there's very little opportunity to talk about these big questions of life. What happens when I die? Because these are such politically charged conversations. You know, religion in our country is so charged. People try to avoid these types of things. They're afraid to even go there. One of my first conversations, I tried to talk to a guy on the plane when I was flying back from ETS in November. And when I asked him, and it was very cordial and polite, I asked him, hey, you know, I'm a pastor, I'm doing a residency, I'd love to ask you just to listen for a few questions. He said, I'm sorry, I don't talk about that, I won't talk about it. You know, thank you for asking me, but I do not talk about that. It's just there's too many arguments about it. I think a lot of people feel that way. It's hard to open the door sometimes because of how charged it's been and how fearful people are. Of course, one of the benefits of just saying, I just want to listen to you, it makes it a lot easier to open that door. But secondly, once the door is open and we can create a safe space where someone actually can share what they think about this to someone who really listens, the door will stay open. Because people are hungry to talk about this stuff and there's no one to talk to. And if you can be the person that opens that door in a safe way with them, you can effectively become their pastor. You can be the person that they talk to about, spiritual things, the questions that they have, even though they're non-believing. And one of the things that I've appreciated that Al said to me recently is we have lost, we being the church, have sometimes kind of lost the idea of pastoring the non-Christian, of being just a voice, not feeling the pressure like we have to convert them now on the spot. We've got to give them the speech. But we can pastor them even in their unbelief as God is working in their life. Because like all of us, the moment that we believe is not because we had, something happen to us on the moment. It's the end result of God working in our lives in various ways to bring us to the point of belief. Sometimes that's a year-long or years, decades-long process of God bringing certain circumstances and people into our life that change the way we see the world. And we have to remember that's how it works with, that's how it works with us. That's how it works with everybody. And so we don't know the people that God has put in our lives. They're on that journey, so to speak. We don't know where they're at in that journey. We pray that, of course, it's exciting to be the person that is there when they actually profess faith. But most of the time we won't be. But we can still pastor them. We can still help them on their way. I mean, who knows? Again, even if I never talk to that kid I talked to this past week and never get a chance to follow up, who knows what fruit may be born by him doing that interview and realizing, I don't know what I'm talking about. I need to look into that more. Maybe that goes on hold for 2 or 3 years, but then after college you realize, I need to look in. Yeah, who knows? So we have to keep a broader perspective. And that frees us to pastor a non-Christian without having to have that kind of view our relationships as only being to getting to the point where we can share the gospel. And then there's that awkwardness created and we almost lose the ability to pastor them after that because they don't want to be truthed like that again. It hurt. That's been a valuable takeaway for me. If we can open the door, people will keep coming to you with this stuff. And you'll have an opportunity to pastor them along the way. Anyway, now it's 10 till. I've talked almost the whole time. Are there any questions? I can talk more, but Bill?
And maybe you haven't gotten to this place in your residency, but once you've listened, is there a cue or a time where you do speak?
Yes. Yep. Each of these, it will come later, hopefully. When I get probably more than 50% of the interviews done, I'll go back to the first ones and I'll... The way he does it is writing a letter. I got to talk to him more about that because I want to ask them why, you know, why a letter? Why, you know, why not just another conversation? But yeah, you do go back, and there is a follow-up, basically saying, I heard what you said. Thank you for being willing to share that with me. You share something from your own life about how God is working in you that you think would be relevant to something that they said. And then you say, what do you think about that? And you start the process over again. And you give them a chance to respond, and you listen. And so the goal is to create that ongoing dialogue. And then, you know, even I wrestle with this. I say, Al, when do you actually truth them? When do you actually share the gospel with them? Because I hear what you're saying, but it makes, you know, I feel like I at some point you actually got to go through it, right? They said, well, yeah, but first of all, keep in mind that just listening to someone, you are communicating something to them, and don't underestimate how powerful that can be in someone's, you know, spiritual development. But secondly, I mean, I think more and more the answer is, in our day, you tell them when they ask, because that's when they're ready for it. But that doesn't mean they're going to say, but you have to hear them asking. He doesn't mean by that, hey, you're a Christian, can you explain the gospel to me? I mean, it's not going to come like that. But you in your conversation with them, you hear them ask, you know, based on something they say. You know, like, we just talked about this last week. So he said, you know, he's got a guy that he's been talking to in his blues bar for years. You know, a very staunch atheist. The first time he met this guy, was very vulgar, you know, intentionally vulgar to him when he found out he was a pastor, just because he hates Christians, he hates God, that, you know, in a blues bar. And anyway, just recently at dinner, oh, this is now over a course of, I think, a couple of years, said, Al, I don't get it, Al. Why do you keep spending time with a guy like me? I'm all messed up. And So that's him asking, and Al said that's what the cross is all about, you know. So it's not that's he heard him ask, and he said that there's an opportunity. I'm coming in, and so we share when we hear. I mean, we give them that directly when we think they're asking. Fred,
you said you were gonna tell us the questions.
Oh yeah, yep. The questions, it's based on a survey. And again, it's just a tool to get into conversations with people, to get people talking. The survey is 5 questions. For me, it's actually very easy for me to actually engage people with this because, of course, I'm a pastor already, so it's even more natural. I'm a pastor. I'm interested in what people think about the big questions of life. Can I sit down and ask you a couple questions? I'm part of this residency. Oh, yeah, sure, absolutely. Oh, yeah, sure. You know, I had that one guy turn me down. I haven't had anyone else turn me down yet. But the 5 questions are, where do you believe the world came from? What do you believe about God? And then often, they'll say 1 or 2 things, and I'll say, anything else? You know, say more. I'll wait, and oftentimes, you know, they'll give a 30-second burst and look at you. I'll say, okay, anything else? And then another 2 or 3 minutes will follow, you know. So just be there to listen. And you have anything more to say? And you'll be surprised what keeps coming out. After, I mean, just for example, on one guy, what do you believe about where the world came from? Oh, evolution, absolutely. You know, that's just clear. It makes it scientific, you know, that whole thing. 30 seconds about that. He finished. And I said, okay. Anything else? And he looked at me. This is great. It was a great light. And he said, "Look, honestly, I have no freaking clue." but this just makes the most sense to me, was his answer. So again, I mean that I think that's part of people talking themselves towards God, not away God. And who heard him say that? I heard him say that, but he heard himself say that. And there's value to that, even though I didn't say anything. There's value to that, just listening.